Hello, and welcome to Literary Loitering, the show that's all about the loitering with a bit of literacy in the same time.
Literacy or literary?
Literary, what we go for.
Literacy, that's a...
yes.
I suppose technically literacy is the same thing, although not as imaginative.
You need literacy to have literary.
Can we not make this the first debate of the show? We've got plenty of more to talk about other than my pronunciation.
The Hoff. Yes. that's a carry-on. Wrong show. Anyway, welcome to Literary Loitering, as Owen said. Obviously, Owen is with us. He's in the house today. So is Andy, so is Andrew, yes. And so am I. I shall remain unnamed for the rest of the show.
We are in the house.
Yes, his name's Rob.
Yeah. No, it's not. Today, I will be Jeff.
Interesting choice. Any reason for that?
No, I may change to Andy, just because you know I'm feeling a bit left out. There's two Andrews here.
Yes. What we need is another Andrew here.
What does that leave me? That leaves Owen and three Andrews.
Could be a band.
Could I change your name to Andreas and be our crazy Spanish cousin?
Aye, aye, aye.
Oh, the crazy Spanish cousin.
Anyway, I'm sure we're supposed to be getting to the news section right about now. Usually we do.
Okay, yes. In the news, Paul Kingsworth's crowdfunded novel has bagged Book of the Year in Bookseller Magazine. What was it? Was it on Kickstarter or on the other crowdfunding sites?
I'm not sure.
It was Unbound. It was Unbound, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, Unbound.
Yes. Paul Kingsworth crowdfunded the novel... Paul Kingsworth's crowdfunded novel, The Wake, which the author wrote in an invented form of Old English and originally envisaged self-publishing, has won the new inaugural Book of the Year prize at the Bookseller Industry Awards. It's actually quite an impressive achievement, winning the first award and it being a crowdfunded novel.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. My problem is all that is undercut by kind of that little passage from the book, and all I can think is... In my head, it sounds just like the Swedish Chef from The Muppets.
just to quickly read. Let's give you a bit of a background to it. The novel is set in 1066 and tells the story of guerrilla fighters who take up arms against the Norman invaders in the Lincolnshire Fens. It's written in a reimagined version of Old English after Kingsworth found that modern English didn't fit the world he was creating. Just a little sample of it. When I walk in the Mergen, all was black, though the night had gone and all walled be black after and for all time. A great wind had come in the night and all was blown and then unbroke.
Okay.
And just in my mind, it's Mergen, Flugen, Hergen,
Gerdy, birdie, gerdy,
One thing I do want to know about this whole thing. I mean, what does this mean about the future of things like these crowdfunded books? Are you going to have like big authors using them as a kind of way to get their idea around?
There are big name authors who are turning to crowdfunding for their books.
It gives them an idea of how their book might do. If people are willing to fund it, then. Don't know, it has a chance to be success.
But I mean, the big name authors, they already have publishing contracts.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit disingenuous to just abuse the funding of other people to get your book published when you can just go to a publisher.
Yeah.
I agree.
It definitely should be left for those that don't have that option.
Just a quick note about the Swedish Chef, right, though. I don't know if you guys know this, but in The Muppets, when they were still broadcasting, the Swedish Chef in Sweden, right... was actually a Norwegian chef.
Yeah, because obviously it doesn't work in Sweden.
Exactly. He was actually a Norwegian chef. And so there are people in Sweden who make fun of Norway thinking that Norwegians talk like that. But there are people in Norway who watch The Muppets and know it as the Swedish Chef who think people in Sweden talk like that. Yeah. So imagine two Muppet fans, you know, one from Norway, one from Sweden, meeting each other.
This is very interesting and very hilarious, but I thought we were a book show.
We are, but it's the Muppets. There's always time for Muppets.
I am sitting with three right now, so I mean, I agree with you.
Oh, he's going there, Andrew. He's going there.
I think you're going to have to bust out those Joe 90 skills again.
Oh, God, yes. let me don my giant glasses. Anyway, yes, I am not Timmy Mallett. He is not here.
Thank God.
Okay, right. Paul Kingsworth's book. It's been longlisted for the Man Booker Prize and the Folio Prize, and shortlisted for Goldsmiths, and it won the Gordon Byrne Prize. So it's already receiving a lot of awards. It sold more than 7,500 copies in hardback to date, according to Kingsworth, and over 18,700 e-books. It beat best-selling award-winning titles, including Jesse Burton's The Miniaturist, Helen MacDonald's H's for Hawk, and David Walliams' Awful Auntie, to win the Bookseller Award. So, you know, it's a strong showing for self-publishing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it definitely shows why it's good to have these crowdfunding sites about.
Well, it definitely adds another argument to, like, why self-publishing is a good thing.
I don't know if you guys know about Unbound. Do you know what Unbound is?
I just assume it's like a book version of Kickstarter.
It is kind of, but it's a bit more complicated than that. Unbound is actually a great idea in concept, but sometimes it doesn't work in practice, just like Kickstarter does.
Yeah.
You know. But the nice thing is that somebody actually took the time to create this system. And it does attract a lot of... it's attracting more and more attention as time goes by, because people are moving away from the traditional kind of ebook way of putting their stuff out and actually using services like Unbound, which have a lot more credibility. So, yeah. Anyway, we're going to move on because we got all sorts to talk about. 100 Years of Solitude, the valuable first edition copy of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's masterpiece, has been found a week after it went missing. So how was it found, Andrew?
I believe it was found in just a second-hand bookstall.
It was. It's one of the most ridiculous things about this story. I mean, it was the fact that they were so brazen that they thought they could sell it like that easily. I mean,
especially when it was signed to the owner.
Yeah.
By his friend, the author.
I mean,
how do you go from one to the other? How do you, you know... Does it not kind of register that the owner's name is in the book?
Clearly it didn't.
In the dedication to the owner by the author.
Yeah, exactly. It is literally a unique item.
So, you know, apparently if you're ever in Bogota and you're looking at second-hand bookstores, you know, you might find a stolen piece.
Yeah, you could be in for a very good bargain.
Exactly.
You might find a copy of The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, dedicated to, I don't know, which king was in the throne when The Hobbit was written? Or was it Queen Elizabeth?
I don't know. It might have been George V. Would it? Yeah, George V.
Yes, George V, I think.
Okay. You never know.
George V might have been a massive fan of The Hobbit, yeah. I mean,
yeah, possibly.
Imagine that history. Him sat on the throne reading his book.
Yes. Anyway, we're happy that it's found because it's not nice when books of that caliber get stolen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the owner, he didn't want to speculate how much it was worth because for him it was a sentimental value.
Yes. Moving on, a news piece that has been dominating the news recently, Picasso's Women of Algiers has broken all records and have been sold at auction for $160 million.
Yes. Now this, I mean, it's not the only painting there that is sold for over $100 million, but it's the highest to have gone at auction. There's another one where that was sold privately, and there's speculation that that went for over $200 million.
Yeah, but this is basically at auction, though. This is at auction. It's one of the. I think it's. Is it the last one that was held in private hands?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I think I remember that from the news.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 160 million, which is 102.6 million pounds, which is basically a multiple rollover on the Euro Millions.
Who bought it?
Anyway,
I don't think that information has been released.
It was 11 minutes of prolonged bidding from telephone buyers preceded the final sale for much more than its pre-sale estimate of $140 million. The final price was $179.3 million, or £115 million. It includes commission of just over 12%. I'm happy to take commission of just over 12%.
I'd be happy with that.
I'll take any percent.
I would be happy with that, yes.
So, yeah, the sale also featured Alberto Giacometti's life-size sculpture Pointing Man, which set its own record.
That went for
The most expensive sculpture sold at auction, going for $141.3 million, or £90.6 million. Both buyers chose to remain anonymous. I am not surprised.
if you're willing to throw around that kind of cash,
you don't want to stand there waving it, do you?
No, though. I can kind of imagine a heist movie tailored around starring George Clooney and Matt Damon.
Yeah. Well, the previous record was for a painting sold at auction was actually $142.4 million. For British painter Francis Bacon's Three Studies of Lucian Freud, and that was sold in 2013.
Yeah.
The Picasso oil painting is a vibrant cubist depiction of nude courtesans and is part of a 15-work series the Spanish artist created in 1954 to 55, designated with the letters A to O. This is an absolutely blockbuster picture. It's one of the most exciting pictures that we've seen on the market for 10 years, said Philip Hoffman, founder and CEO of the Fine Art Fund Group. Yes, there are one or two Picassos that could even smash that record, but it has a huge wall presence. It's a big show-off picture.
Yes.
And now it's going to be... I think any museum worth their salt would try and buy this.
I was going to say, it has to be...
I think there would have been...
Like that. Are you saying it belongs in a museum?
Yes. I mean,
and cue the indie music.
Museums can't afford it. This is the thing.
That is the problem. I mean, you got people who... Something like this is only worth as much as someone's willing to pay. And unfortunately, there are people that will easily pay more than museums for the civil joy that they have it.
People that selfish, they'll pay that much money just to put it in their own house. No one can see it. They're going to put it in some sort of vault, probably.
No, what you'll find is there are a lot more people who don't do that than there are who do, because there are a lot of these wealthy multi-millionaires or billionaires or whatever you want to call them. They will buy these paintings and then they will basically let them go on tour around the world. And museums will basically bid for the privilege of having
them. That's true, yeah.
Thing is, it is an investment.
Yeah.
You know, they may have spent over £100 million on it. But imagine this, right? That Picasso, if, say, the National Gallery in London wanted to host that,
yeah,
they might pay couple of million for the privilege.
Yeah, you're going to
make you make your money back on what you spend. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it could go to the Louvre. It could go to to one of the big galleries in New York or, one of the other. It could go on like a world tour.
Yeah.
It would have high security all the time. The museums would ensure that it had high security. It's fully insured, obviously.
I can imagine that bankrupting an insurance company.
Well, there are a couple of insurance companies that specialise in these sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, I think you'd have to specialise in that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, there's no you couldn't go to like AXA or somewhere like that. other insurance companies are available. I mean, the one with the dog, for example, they only do car insurance. I'm sure they wouldn't cover this.
Oh yes,
that'll be.
Were there any valuables in your car at the time it was stolen?
Yes, there was a Picasso. value.
Whistler's mother was in the car.
Oh God!
Sorry,
who was driving it?
We're not interested in your mate's mum.
who was driving the car, Mr. Bean?
Yes.
Isn't a number invented for how much of that insurance premium costs?
Yes.
Anyway. How does Bean insure his car? I would love to know.
Yes. Okay, right. We're going to move on from that record-breaking sum, which kind of, you know, it kind of makes your eyes bleed when you think about just how much money there is floating around at the top.
Exactly. I mean, I would say, you know, people definitely have more money than sense, but I think the repercussions would hurt too much.
Yeah. Probably not a good idea to say it on the show or on our sister show On The Box, because we've already got enough people after us.
There's pretty much just a waiting line now of people who want to kill us.
KGB, gang members.
Australia.
Mafia will probably join that list at some point.
Australia as well.
God, yes. The entire nation of Australia. We are not going to suffer the humiliation of a boot, by the way.
Okay.
Simpsons joke.
I remember. Yeah, I do remember that episode.
I haven't watched that much The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Me neither.
I have something in common with Andy. It's the end times.
Again, this is a book show, not a show about TV.
Okay, moving on.
Yes, unless you want to do a TV show.
Sales figures have come out that show quite clearly that Britain, the UK, is finally falling out of love with celebrity memoirs, and I am going, yes!
I think we all are.
I think when you got people like Katie Price writing these kind of books,
we've got to take a step back. You said writing.
Yes.
Okay, that's a good point. I don't know how much of it is actually hers. I think she just says, well, this...
Probably just the picture at the front.
I'd be surprised if even that wasn't her. That isn't actually her on the picture of her own book.
So when I was 15, I went to the shop for some fags. When Katie was 15, you know, when I was 15, I used to help my mother quite a lot by doing the shopping.
Yes.
Ghostwriting.
So it's going to be an easy job than like Wayne Rooney's ghostwriter. Ball kick good.
Ball kick bad.
No, ball kick good, granny. Ball kick bad, granny.
I was going to avoid the whole guy thing.
Don't Wayne Rooney.
Hey?
We don't want
to. Oh, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. Someone will just jangle some keys in front of him and he'll be fine.
Look at the shiny, tinkly things, Wayne. Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy?
Well, you have to.
I'll think though,
he's not going to do any harm to us. I mean, he has no knuckles for, because he drags them along the floor.
even so, I'll strike him off the Christmas card list.
Yeah. Sorry.
Do we even have anyone left on the Geek Show Christmas card list?
I tried putting Phil Glenister on, and I'm pretty sure Rob's tried put on Jodie Kidd. I think that's about it.
Not saying anything to that.
Different show.
Anyway. You've got the wrong list there.
Yes.
Oh, anyway, obviously I do.
Celebrity memoirs. So, yes, Britain is falling out of love with celebrity memoirs, and it's about time too, because, I'm sorry, they
go too far.
Now, some of them, you know, if it's somebody who's interesting and has I mean, let's put it this way. Okay, I was watching a documentary on BBC Four about Rod Stewart's career.
Yeah.
You know, not just his solo career, but about his time with, you know, the Jeff Beck band and his time with Small Faces. Was it Small Faces or The Faces? I can't remember. It was one or the other. I can't remember. I think it was Small Faces. Or it might be The Faces. But, you know, and about his early rock career and then the start of his solo career and things like that. I thought, you know, he's the kind of guy whose autobiography you would want to sit down and read. He's lived, he's been around since the 60s, you know, he's lived his life. He's done all sorts of interesting things.
He's lived through a crazy time in music.
Exactly.
Went through a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know until I watched this documentary, I didn't know that the Jeff Beck Group was actually one of the primary inspirations for Led Zeppelin. Yeah. That came as news to me.
Oh, I did not know that.
Exactly.
The more you know.
You want to avoid the memoirs where... They're like 19 years old or something.
Yeah, you mean the Bieber memoirs?
Yes, Bieber's an excellent example. I don't want to hear about...
I really thought you were going to say had an excellent memoir, because if that was the case...
No. Apparently he's written... Well, he's written. He said there's more than one.
There's more than one. Yeah, but his first one was...
From there, he wrote a 10.
No, his first one was, when I was seven, I liked jelly babies, and then my mum made me cake, and I had a nice birthday, and I started singing, and people said I was good at singing, and I thought I should grow up to be a singer, and it was really good, because I went to dancing lessons, and my mum gave me dancing lessons, and gave me more cake, and I still like jelly babies, even to today, and, I think puppies are great, and I like soft, cute, fluffy things, and then, you know, people said I was really good at singing and dancing, and then I thought I should maybe do dancing as a full thing. And
there's Dan as well, but yes, there's also the fact that he the way he got to where he is now, he put videos on YouTube. That's not going to be interesting to read. You know what I mean? Somebody found his video on YouTube.
My mate had a camera, and then I thought I could sing and dance. And then
just
could...
suddenly become a Johnny.
I recorded it on my Nokia 3210.
Had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that Ludacris was in one of his music videos.
Ludacris? Who's Ludacris?
He is.
Oh, he's the one from Pimp My Ride US, isn't he?
Let me just say this.
If someone says the word ludicrous to me, I automatically think Spaceballs.
I just know that in Fight for New York for the PS2.
But no, see, this is rather called Chris, and he enjoys Ludo a lot.
Yeah, Ludo Chris. I like that. Oh, yes. So, Ludacris, if you are listening, tell us, do you like Ludo? Do you?
He hasn't responded yet. I'm disappointed.
No. It's funny that. I mean, obviously, he must be screaming at the radio or something, or the computer or something.
Screaming at his Beats headphones. The branded headphones are available.
I'm pretty sure, once again, you've mixed them up with someone else.
Anyway, yes, Ludacris.
I am so sorry.
Ludacris, you have a ridiculous name, and it does make me think of Spaceballs. It makes me think of Spaceballs.
If you have been offended by anything brought up in Literary Loitering, please, we do have a website.
No,
don't
we don't.
Visit it.
No, just don't visit it. I am a firm exponent of not being apologetic. So if you are offended by anything... that we've said, Mr. Ludacris, I don't care.
And you're way too easily offended. Look into that.
Despite the fact that he has already been mixed up with Exhibit and Dr. Dre.
Actually, no, I wasn't mixing him up with Dr. Dre.
Oh, were you not?
No, I was just referencing the fact that everybody seems to use Beats headphones.
All right.
And they're not very good.
Yeah, no, they're not. Alone them now. That's why I use Razer Electras.
Which are gaming headphones and have far too much bass.
It's all about that bass.
Don't you dare.
Get off the show, Owen. You're fired.
You're going to get locked in the cupboard.
Suspicious cupboard.
Yes. So, anyway, enough about Ludacris and Bieber and,
and all these other people who are now joining the queue.
Katie Price's ghostwriter.
Celebrity memoirs. The certain amount that everybody's losing.
Right, I mean, John Terry's autobiography, what a fascinating read that was. You know, I could feel the racism.
I was trying to decide, is he actually being serious about this? And oh, no.
You know, it was a fascinating read. It was so gripping, you know.
By gripping, you mean you were so horrified you physically couldn't put it down. My fingers are locked onto it.
It was quite a bad case of car crash syndrome.
You instantly see an accident, but you can't stop looking.
Yeah, it's so horrific, but you really shouldn't be looking at it, but you just can't stop. I mean, obviously, it skirted around the issue of other players' wives.
Yes. I think we could agree certain celebrities' biographies are fine. I mean, like, where someone who's gone through an interesting life or someone who's actually reached a certain point where they actually have good stories to talk about.
Actually, I've got to ask, did anyone here read the Alex Ferguson autobiography?
Strangely enough, no.
No.
I've read a few, like, thingies from it, like...
Yeah.
Segments.
Segments from it, but...
Extracts.
I didn't buy it, no.
See, I'd like to... it'd be interesting if he had, like, an addendum from the last couple of years of Manchester United not being very good.
He left before that.
Yeah, I know he left before that, but, you know, just an addendum, just an add-on, like, couple of chapters about... who was it he chose to replace
David Moyes.
David Moyes, about, you know, his choosing of David Moyes and how much he probably kicked himself for picking the wrong guy and stuff like that.
Well, clearly, that's the sequel.
Yes.
And then, you know... Stanley autobiography is always highly sought after. It's surprising how you can't find them because there's so many people who want to read it.
Yeah, because he's Stanley.
Yeah.
Is his autobiography actually called Excelsior?
One of them should be.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure one of them is.
I don't know why he suddenly started saying that.
I don't know. It was a great bit from the new Avengers film.
What?
The Stanley appearance.
Where he gets
drunk and he's just drunk the Excelsior.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I wasn't too impressed with the new Avengers movie. It was...
You made that much clear.
Yeah. It just felt like filler. It just felt like they were crowbarring bits in, ready for the other movies that follow after. So, yeah. Anyway, leaving the Avengers to one side, celebrity autobiographies. Robert Downey Jr.'s one would be interesting.
Oh, definitely. Charlie Sheen?
Alan Sugar.
No, Charlie Sheen's one would not be interesting.
His would actually be
single
Charlie Sheen's one would be hilarious.
Yes.
I think you'll find. Just kind of... So, where's the tiger blood? that's the first thing people would look for in a Charlie Sheen autobiography. They'd want a chapter just called Tiger Blood.
Yes.
I mean, the Alan Sugar's biography and Steve Jobs.
Sugar Jobs.
Oh, God. I was actually trying to think what their names could be. If Alan Sugar, I've got, do you want some sugar with that? And Steve Jobs being no jobs left.
No.
I think Steve Jobs, though, it was written posthumously.
Posthumous, yeah. Although posthumous. After the comedy is gone. The comedy has left the building. Now let's write this autobiography.
Probably after they wrote the Charlie Sheen one.
Yeah, it's probably all been expended on Charlie Sheen one.
Yes.
Seriously, in Charlie Sheen's autobiography, if there isn't a chapter called Tiger Blood, then I want my money back. I am serious about this, Charlie.
Like written in literal tiger blood.
No. I just want the chapter to be called Tiger Blood. I don't care what it's about. It could be about, you know, his birthday party when he was three. You know, I don't care. I just want a chapter in his autobiography called Tiger Blood. The other chapter that should be in Charlie Sheen's autobiography. One of them should be Tiger Blood. The other one should be Winning.
No, that's the name of the book. Winning.
Okay, fine. I'll go with that.
Yeah, that works.
Thank you. If Charlie Sheen's listening, we've done the work for you.
Yes. So, yes.
I think my favourite autobiography I've ever read is Richard Iowati, because his is just hilarious. Yes. It's Iowati on Iowati.
That's fair enough.
And it's done in the style of like an interviewer talking to this like really amazing audio filmmaker. But like Richard Iowati is both parts. It's insane. I love it.
I would like to read like a John Hurt one because I think he's a fantastic actor. But what about someone like Russell Brand?
No.
I'm tired of him.
Maybe in 20 years.
No.
I think he'd be more acceptable in 20 years.
But right now he's... Russell Brand, number one, he's not funny. Number two, I think he's a bit too opinionated and a bit too set in his own idealistic view and not willing to look at the world as it really is. He's very much an idealist, and it's nice and all being an idealist, but you deal with the world the way it is.
I can't.
He's an idealist, but he takes no responsibility for trying to make the world into the way he wants it to be.
Yeah. I kind of watched a couple of clips of his interview with, Question Time with whatever, with Ed Miliband, and I felt sorry for Ed.
Actually, no, I felt sorry for Russell Brand because I don't, in terms of, you know, Ed Miliband just looked like, he was like, who is this clown? Why am I talking to him?
Russell Brand was thinking the same thing.
The thing is, Russell Brand is approaching it from the perspective of somebody who has no idea how the politics of these things work. Mm. Right. If he was actually involved in politics, if he put his money where his mouth is, he would go for an MP's position. He would stand for election.
He did it, didn't he? He didn't win the election.
Al Murray put his money where his mouth is and actually put himself forward.
Rufus Hand just less than half a Lib Dem vote, Al Murray.
Yeah.
Rufus Hand done it before. I mean, Rufus Hand, I think he's dropped off the face of obscurity.
But this is what I'm saying. If you are such an idealist that you want to change the political system or change the political will or basically change the political landscape, put your money where your mouth is, go out, stand for election, campaign, put your policies forward, simple as that, okay? That's the only way you're going to enact any of this change that you keep spouting on about, Russell. I'm sorry, but that is the truth of it. When you speak to politicians like Ed Miliband, they are just sitting there going, who is this clown? Why am I talking to him? Why am I wasting my time trying to tell this guy who is convinced the sky is green that the sky is actually blue? You're not going to change anyone's thinking by doing that. You know, and this is what happens when you have observers who don't know how the political system works, who don't know anything about having to compromise just to get things done, just to get the country running. You know, they don't know about any of this because everybody has their own ideology. And when you got somebody who's completely outside coming in saying all of this stuff, yes, they create waves and stuff like that, but they never last.
Perhaps I shouldn't have mentioned that at all.
I just don't like half-baked measures when it comes to stuff like this.
Maybe we could have a fun debate about this in the future.
No, that's not going to be any fun whatsoever.
Oh no, it can be fun. It depends. I've just been serious because you asked me a question seriously. If you asked me a question humorously, then it would have been.
I don't even remember the question I asked. I don't even remember.
You brought up Russell Brand's autobiography. It's your fault.
Before we start these shows, we just need a list of Rob's triggers.
We've passed
10 shows. You should know my triggers now.
It's anything political, anything with J.K. Rowling, anything with Russell Brand.
And apparently not knowing his triggers is also a trigger.
Seems so.
Anyway. Moving on from celebrity autobiographies.
Swiftly.
Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie has been given a talk in America at the Penn World Voices Festival. And it's actually been quite an interesting talk because she's the purpose of what she was talking about, one of her lines was, no one is being murdered or hauled off by the American government to prison for writing a novel, whereas there are people in other parts of the world who are actually, that's actually happening to them. They're being killed or they're being imprisoned just for writing a book. Mm-hmm. Now, the point of her talk is basically the fact that America has a lot of social, economic and political injustices going on, but no one's speaking out against them. She goes on to say, to choose to write is to reject silence. She's acted as curator of the festival along with, Laszlo Jakab Orsos. So she had a front row seat to the rolling debates about the Charlie Hebdo attack. And that brought the whole idea of freedom of speech really into plain view. You know, what actually counts as freedom of speech now? I honestly don't think freedom of speech is the right to say whatever you want and, you know, damn everyone else. Mm. I think that freedom of speech carries a great weight of responsibility with it. Mm. If you're going to say something, then you need to choose your words carefully.
Well, yeah, it is a great power.
It's right to an opinion, I think, on something.
Yeah. And if you're going to do something that you know will offend, almost a quarter of the population of the planet?
Yeah, then maybe think twice about doing it.
Yes. You know, if you know it's going to offend that many people, then don't do it. You know, it's not that, we're not saying don't think about it, we're just saying think twice about it.
I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes people just like to be offensive. They just like having that kind of effect on people.
Yeah, but
it's offensive. It's kind of like that rich high schooler thing of just going around and insulting people and then going, oh, I'm sorry, I'm just expressing my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's expressing an opinion and there's like,
but the thing is,
like offensive, for example, comedian offensive.
But the thing is, I've actually met some of those people when I was at university, you know, expressing their opinion. My reply to them was, okay, so I'm a northern monkey and my language is quite physical, so can I express my opinion on your face?
Which, by that logic...
Yeah, because we are a lot more physical up here.
That much is true.
Yeah. You know? So me randomly throwing punches around the vicinity of somebody's head, you know,
is just how you express yourself.
Yes, you know, I may be happy, I may be sad, I may be hungry, I don't know.
There's ways around everything.
Yes. So yeah, anyway, expression is important. Freedom of speech is important, I think, but I do honestly think that it's, you know, it's got to be tempered with a modicum of common sense at the very least. I don't know what you guys think.
I would agree, but unfortunately, as humans have progressed, common sense has kind of just taken a back seat.
I blame the internet.
You can't blame the internet for everything.
No, you can blame the internet for the lack of common sense, because now we live in the internet age, so people are growing up with things like Facebook and 4chan.
Yeah, the internet is just a forum to post whatever you want, whenever you want.
Twitter. As long as it's under
with like
internet,
zero thought.
I mean, Rule 34 is a thing.
Why do we have to bring this into a book show?
So anyway, we'll leave Rule 34 to one side.
Just leave the rules of the internet to one side.
No, there's only one rule of the internet, and that is Rule 34.
There are others, unfortunately.
No, the others are not important. Rule 34 is the only one that carries any kind of weight.
Oh, God.
I mean, Rule 1, you do not talk about B. I'm sorry, I've talked about B lots. B's done nothing to me. You know, in fact, I'm worried about the lack of B's. You know, B's are on the decline. Why should I not talk about bees?
The internet, though. I mean, you've got things that are going to be offensive, let's just say, here, and not in another country, or vice versa. So,
well,
I mean, you're going...
Yes, see, this is the thing. Here's the thing, right? You know, in this country, Andy's actually absolutely correct on this. In this country, certain hand gestures, we find offensive in this country, right? But we see the thumbs up as a good thing, yeah?
Yeah.
It means great.
Yes.
And similarly, you see like loads of Japanese girls just running around, like giving people the fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're more the V sign rather than...
No, that's the peace sign, you know. They don't actually know what that means.
Yeah, the peace sign, yeah.
But here's the thing. The thumbs up, if you go somewhere like Bangladesh, is actually quite offensive.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh.
Yes. You don't give people the thumbs up in Bangladesh. It's like this hand open thing in Greece, you know. That might be talk to the hand in America... But in Greece, that's actually quite offensive.
Hmm. Yeah, I've just done essays on this, ironically, on culture and things. There's quite a few. It's
it's weird how different hand gestures are interpreted in different ways in different parts of the world. I mean, we might be, you know, we might actually have some innocuous hand gesture say you're across the street and you're talking to someone across the street and you're using hand gestures. You might go, going for a coffee. So you're just thumb pointing to like somewhere and then you mimic taking a sip of coffee. But if you're in a different country, you might have just, you know, called his wife a big hippo or something like that. We don't know.
No.
It's like that. It's like a dress.
Yeah, just thanks for all the advice, Rob.
It goes like...
Yes, my life is now different.
Like with direct...
Good.
People like dress codes as well.
Yes.
For example, like funerals is a really one. For example, white, black, and white is the other way around.
Yeah.
In certain cultures.
Oh, have you seen that Chinese thing?
Yes. Yeah, I think white is funerals in China.
Yeah. Have you seen that thing that the Chinese government, the Chinese Ministry of Culture, is trying to crack down on this? It's hilarious. They're trying to crack down on people hiring strippers at funerals.
Yes, I heard about this as well.
It's just going to... I read the article and I went, what?
Did someone misinterpret the term pole bearer?
Ha 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 ha! That's such a clever joke.
Oh, God. Well done, Andrew. I applaud you. But yeah.
We actually had a clever joke on this show. How about that?
This is the thing. This is a strange custom in China and in like Taiwan and places like that. There's a strange custom that if you get lots of people coming to your funeral, it ensures a better start for you in the next life. So it's actually formed into quite a lucrative industry for people who basically just say, look, if you want lots of people at your funeral, then just hire us. We'll guarantee everything. You know, it's like the Van Wilder of funerals.
But, I mean, what if it's the man's, like, whoever's the person's request, their request to have... You can't go against that.
If the Ministry of Culture says you're not allowed to do it, then they're not allowed to do it. It's as simple as that. But the thing is, in more rural areas of China, it's still a massive thing. And you just, you know, it's like, I don't understand, you know. Anyway, shall we move on?
What? Do we have time?
Freedom of speech is a thing.
Do we have time to move on?
Yes, we do have time to move on.
That's one new to insult.
We have time to move on because we were going to do something, weren't we? What were we going to do?
Oh, the audiobook thing.
But yes, we have reviews first.
Yes, we do. Yes.
So what are you reviewing for us this week, Owen?
I've been trying to speak for one. I've been reviewing the novelization of Alien Resurrection.
Oh, is this the fourth movie, is it?
It is, yes. It is an adaptation. Well, it is based on the screenplay by Josh... Do it again. It is based on the screenplay by Josh Whedon. And it's been written by A.C. Crispin.
Okay, not heard of them, but... No. Joss Whedon I've heard of.
Yes. A.C. Crispin, she's a... novelist, well, obviously, she's a sci-fi novelist who's quite well known for doing Star Trek books and other sci-fi stuff, and I think she's done Star Wars books as well.
Okay, fantastic.
So, you know, it's nice to see a female sci-fi writer, something we've mentioned before that apparently there's a serious lacking of.
Fantastic.
Yes, I'll just read the blurb that we have here on the back. There's a brilliant tagline at the top that just simply says, "The screaming never stops."
But how would they know if they can't hear it?
Well, there is that, apparently in space no one can hear you straight.
Can we not get into this kind of bit? Is this going to be the whole...
Okay. Let's not say anything. Owen, the floor is yours. We will make comments after the review.
Thank you. I've always wanted a floor. Now that I finally have one, I feel... Okay, I'll just go on. The blurb starts as, aboard the deep space vessel USM Auriga, the unthinkable occurs. Ellen Ripley awakes. Her last memory is of her own fiery death on the prison colony on Farina 161. And yet she lives stronger, fiercer, changed.
We can rebuild you.
We have the technology.
I didn't want to butt in.
We have the technology.
Somebody had to butt in and put that in there. Anyway, yes. How is the book? I think we're all pretty familiar with the story.
Yes. Unfortunately, I'm not, because I have not watched this film. I watched the first film many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And it did intrigue me, but I never really got around to watching any of the others, or even watching the first
one again.
You've
not seen Aliens?
I haven't, the greatest
action films ever made.
I'm ashamed to have mentioned that here. At least I didn't mention it on a movie show.
Yes.
Where I could have been ridiculed.
You are still going to get ridiculed. We're just waiting for you to finish this review.
Yes. I could already hear the ridicule coming.
Yeah, I mean, for you, once you finish this review, it's pretty much game over, man.
It's pretty much...
I can never work on a movie show again.
Preemptive ridicule.
Review.
Yes, the review. It is really well detailed. They've got fantastic detail in this that really sort of paints the picture so well.
So it's good in the descriptive sense.
Oh, definitely. I'll read a short paragraph from you here.
Yep.
The alien's eyes seemed huge, totally disproportionate from the rest of its elongated, misshapen head. The narrow, elephatical. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it.
Spell it.
Oh, fair enough. Iris appeared to curve around the lens, marking it as something otherworldly, non-Terran. It blinked. It's really good in sort of that. And it does put you in that kind of place. I think if I watched the movie, it would kind of give me the same kind of feeling as the book has.
Possibly, but you know, you're using your imagination when you're reading the
book.
Well,
yeah, but I am confident that of what I've read. I mean, as it is an adaptation, there are a couple of differences.
Yeah,
I'd have to search through the book to find them. But I think, on all, it's a really good book. And obviously, there are enough people out there who enjoy the Alien franchise enough that buying this book, which is part of a line. It's definitely worth a look. And for the writer, I think she's done a really good job.
Okay, cool. Hmm.
Let the ridicule begin.
Yes. You've never watched Aliens?
I watched it. How? I watched the first one once when I was a young kid.
No, Alien I'm fine with, but you've never watched, as Andrew has said, one of the greatest action movies ever made.
Alien was a horror. Aliens was completely different, but it's a classic.
Yes.
It's something that you had to watch. Even if you're like four, you had to watch it.
Yes. seriously, when you can, watch Aliens.
I'll watch it tonight. How's that sound?
Yes. Watch it tonight. Because, I'm sorry, you know, there are so many references that are used now in video games and comics and, you know, just about everything that have come from just those movies, you know. The whole nuke it from orbit thing is from Aliens. Yeah.
Plus, get away from her, you B word we can't say on this show.
Get away from her, you female dog.
Isn't it stay away?
No, get away from her. You know. I mean, it was the first time you actually saw anything like a mech in a sci-fi movie. You know, in an action sci-fi movie. Because, you know, the loader is effectively a mech.
Yeah. Well, it's a mech suit.
I do apologise to the entire geek world. I have obviously an embarrassment.
Shame on you. Shame.
Embarrassment
shame.
To the kingdom.
Shame.
I understand if you said you didn't watch Alien 3. But
yeah, Alien 3 we were fine with.
So you'd have been fine if I'd lied, because then you would have known.
No. We were fine if you just said, I haven't watched Alien 3. You know, if you'd not watched Alien 3, we would have gone, yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
It would have been
it's all good. I've not seen Alien Resurrection. Don't worry about it.
It would have been awkward if Alien 3 was the only one I had watched. That would have been just very awkward.
If Alien 3 was the only one you'd watched, it would be like, yeah.
Yeah, I would have been shown I would have been shown the window rather than the door. I'm looking at a window now. I could easily see myself going through it.
No, we wouldn't do that to you, Owen. We like you.
No, you'd lock me in the cupboard.
Yes, with Andrew.
Why am I going in the cupboard? What am I doing?
Oh, wait, I'm suffering as well. Why am I laughing?
No.
It's the job after that worries me the most.
The reason why you're going in the cupboard is so you can patiently explain to him why he should watch Aliens.
During a time when I could be watching Aliens.
Yes. Anyway, at some point we'll just have to set up a TV and stuff in there, and maybe a little couch. Right, okay. I was going to do this book, but I don't think we've got enough time.
What a surprise.
We barely have enough time to do what we are going to do, so we're going to do the audiobooks instead. Right. The Telegraph have put up what they think are the 20 best audiobooks of all time. And here they are going from 20 to 1, I suppose. So where's the end one? Starting off at number 20, The American Lover by Rose Tremaine. Which is read by Juliet Stevenson, Rick Jerome, Kate Ross, and Lisa Ross, and Philip Franks and Julie Bond. Landmarks is at 19 by Robert McFarlane, which is read by Roy McMillan. The Spire by William Golding is at number 18, read by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm. Well, that's quite good.
Yeah. Tamar.
He does everything now.
Yeah, Tamar by Mal Peet is read by Aaron Lester and Anna Maxwell Martin. Number 16, Sense of the Shadow Bible by Ian Rankin, which is read by James McPherson. 15 is Us by David Nichols, read by Justin Salinger. 14 is The Embassy of Cambodia, written and read by Zadie Smith. 13, The Testament of Mary by Colm Tobin, which is read by Meryl Streep. So big name actors are getting involved in this. The Examined Life at number 12 by Stephen Grotz, which is read by Peter Marinka. At number 11, This Boy, a Memoir of a Childhood, written and read by Alan Johnson. Number 10 is The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes, read by Richard Morant.
Which I've got when I first saw that, I accidentally misread that as Rick Moranis.
Yep.
Which was almost the greatest book ever written.
Oh, God, yes. Alone in Berlin by Hans Fallada, translated by Michael Hoffman, and read by John Telfer. Oh, Telfer, I can't remember that. Travels with Charlie by John Steinbeck, read by Peter Marinka. At 7 is Brighton Rock by Graham Greene, read by Samuel West. Interesting, because the old Brighton Rock movie was actually was pretty good.
Yeah, I remember really liking that film, but I haven't seen it in a while.
The one with Dickie Attenborough.
Yeah, that's the one.
Number 6 is The Last Cigarette, The Smoking Diaries, Volume 3, written and read by Simon Gray. Number 5 is Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire by J.K. Rowling, read by Stephen Fry.
Well then, Rob, you managed to read that entire thing without like just going on a massive rage fit.
Yes. Number 4 is Bill Bryson's A Short History of Nearly Everything, read by William Roberts. Number 3 is Plain Tales from the Hills by Rudyard Kipling, read by Martin Jarvis. Number 2 is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night by Mark Haddon, read by Ben Tibber. And number 1 is John le Carré's A Delicate Truth, which is written and read by John le Carré. So, yeah.
Yes.
So, guys, on the basis of that list, what's missing? What would you have? What is the greatest book that you want to have as an audiobook, and who would you have it read by?
Does the person reading it have to be alive now?
No.
Okay, in which case...
And they could also be fictional. And
I've got mine already.
Okay, right, guys, go. Ignore the man writing on the board.
Well, mine would be any one of the old Mr. Men books read by Chris Hemsworth playing Thor.
Oh, no, that just sounds terrible.
The Mr. Men books read by Chris Hemsworth playing Thor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but no.
Okay, this just in from
the crazy other man that we have in the studio.
I wasn't going to call him that.
Well, I have.
Okay, this just in from Rob, who does Cinema Eclectica and The Geek Show and Too Sweet Wrestling. He says, Slaughterhouse-5 by read by Werner Herzog. I hate you so much for that. I can just imagine how that would be. Graham's going to love you for it as well. Right, okay, what about you guys?
Mine is a bit similar to Andy's in The Very Hungry Caterpillar, read by Orson Welles.
Actually, that's a really cool one. I like
it's
that.
It's quite good.
What about you guys?
Well...
It's all right, you can have more than one. You can come up with more than one.
After his decision, I'm not having it. I'm sorry, but no. I just wouldn't have that.
What?
Mr. Men, read by Hemsworth as Thor. I'm sorry, but that's...
No. You want the Mr. Men read by Brian Blessed.
There we go.
Very Hungry Caterpillar read by Brian Blessed.
No. It's actually better with Orson Welles. But Three Little Pigs by Brian Blessed would be a good one, yes.
He huff and he puff.
Yeah,
and he blow the house down.
Oh, I've got another one. The Call of Cthulhu, read by Matt Berry.
Oh, that is
Oh, that is wonderful.
That really works.
That really does. Sometimes comedy just isn't comedy, it's just genius.
I'm just thinking, just To Kill a Mockingbird read by Richard Ayoade.
Oh, God.
It would get very strange very quick.
Yes.
Going to some strange places now, Jem.
Mine was just going to be the key.
Well, she has to do it in the Moss voice from the IT crowd.
Yes, as Moss from the IT crowd.
Wow. I'm surprised nobody's mentioned Morgan Freeman for anything.
That's because we're actually trying to make it funny.
Yes.
Yeah, because Morgan Freeman could legitimately do pretty much any book.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could actually do the Mr. Men and Little Mrs. books.
The Hobbit, read by Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator. No, The Hobbit, read by Arnold Schwarzenegger in his role as the cop from Kindergarten Cop. Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Oh, dear. But yes,
or as Arnold Schwarzenegger as he was in Predator, get to the chopper,
or possibly Commando.
Oh, Commando! Or Roddy. During the 80s, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger at any point during the 80s. No, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, not Jingle All the Way.
No, the best, the absolute pinnacle, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, read by Arnold Schwarzenegger in his role as Hercules.
Schwarzenegger was Hercules.
Yeah, Hercules in New York he was.
Yes, that's unfortunate.
I was going to say, don't you mean Conan, but yeah, no.
No, Hercules in New York when he couldn't actually act for toffee. And his Austrian accent was very strong.
You said that like he can act for toffee now.
Well, yeah, he managed to convince people to vote for him to become governor of California.
That's quite an act. That's quite an act in itself.
I think it's just the accent. They thought they were like ticking a box for something else.
This is California. Remember, they knew perfectly well what they were doing.
What the fuck? California was going to be like one of his new films.
No, it's just like one of those awkward. Oh, I'm not quite sure what he's saying. I'll just tick the box anyway because otherwise, I suppose that would be if it's England.
Yeah, but these are Californians. They knew full well what they were doing.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not going to exonerate California. This is all on your heads.
Rob's got another one.
Another one. 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, God, no.
No. 50 Shades of Grey, read by Christopher Lloyd in his role as Doc Brown.
No. Oh, my childhood.
Great Scott.
I'm just Ronald Reagan.
The actor?
I'm just going to just fall on the floor and just curl up at the
maybe
ball
getting 50
and cry.
Shades of Grey read by anybody funny would be.
Nick Helm.
Actually, I think I have
50 Shades of Grey read by Nick Helm.
Ooh.
we have gasping noise.
50 Shades of Grey.
So what was that? 50 Shades of Grey read by Ron Swanson. Yes, I can see that working.
Can I really try to get to my actual decision?
Yeah.
Everyone's had their turn. Well, the book I was thinking of has already been there. The Curious Incident of the Dog at the Nighttime.
Yeah.
Read by, not the person you said, but by Patrick Stewart.
That'd be a good one.
That would be, yeah.
That'd be a good one. But what about a hilarious one? Now you're thinking.
There's so much
fun we could have with this.
If I must destroy this book in every way, if I really must.
You don't have to. You could just make it more entertaining. It could be a really boring book. You know, it could be, you know, War and Peace.
Read by Jack Nicholson as his character from The Shining, getting gradually more and more crazy as he's going through.
What, War and Peace?
Yes.
That would actually work. I like that would actually work.
Thank you. Would have been much better if I actually remembered the name of the character, but I think...
Well, I believe his name might be Jack.
Jack Torrance.
Yeah, because all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Wait, so The Shining wasn't a documentary. That's just Jack Nicholson in his off time.
Yeah.
What about The Bible, read by Stephen Hawking?
No.
That kind of gets on to offensive.
No, it's not that it's offensive. It's just kind of, it's one of those things that people would automatically go, yeah, you know, but, you know, it could happen.
I'm not sure if that one would be the Bible read by Richard Dawkins.
See, but, if you went the Bible read by Jedward.
that just blows.
Yeah, oh, Pee Wee Herman.
No, yeah, I mean, Jedward, they're not a product of either creationism or evolution. But actually,
but the Bible read by Jedward, can you imagine how they'd be?
Oh, I want to read this part. No, I'll read this part. Then you can read that part. But I don't want to read that part. You can read that part. With Jedward.
So David went to war against the Pahilistines and...
At least there's two of them, so not just to be with Jedward.
Oh,
at least there's two of them, so they'd actually get on the hack.
Andrew's found another one.
Alan Rickman reading My Little Pony, the Big Book of Equestria.
Oh, God!
Alan Rickman.
And he won't be joining us for the rest of his life.
Well, are we going to...
You could do half as Hans Gruber and half as Snape.
No, you've got to have the Sheriff of Nottingham in there.
Yes, you actually do.
I'm going to cut your heart out with a spoon. Why a spoon, cousin? Why not an axe or a knife?
What about James Bond Goldfinger read by Mike Myers as Austin Powers?
No. If you went with Mike Myers as Mike Myers' dad in So I Married an Axe Murderer, then it'd be funny.
Okay.
Because he's basically supposed to be the epitome of Scottish. He's even got the Scottish Wall of Fame with Sean Connery and the Bay City Rollers on there. SATURDAY, night. And we're just going off
on forever, couldn't we?
Yes, we could go on forever. But I think final ones then. Final ones for one for each of us.
Should we do it clockwise? So, Andrew?
I'll start with one that I actually found online, which is like an impersonate, which is just 50 Shades Grey again by Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
I've said all mine.
Just think of a random book and a random person. If they work, they work.
I can't think.
You can't think? Owen? Owen's looking at the shelf over there thinking, I need inspiration. Oh, what can I do?
Oh, the William Shakespeare's Star Wars read by, I don't know, what was his name? James L. Jones?
Could work, yeah.
Oh, wait, I've thought of a better one for my last one.
Oh.
Pride and Prejudice, read by Morbo from Futurama.
Right. Ooh, that one could be interesting.
Would you like to share it with us?
No. I'm going to keep it in my head where it belongs.
I got one. You could have 50 Shades of Grey again, read by Borat.
I think we've done 50 Shades of Grey enough.
Yeah, but it's like,
can we just put that book down?
Well, it's not like we can make it any worse.
Yes.
Well, I'll have to agree with you on that one.
I do have the perfect person who should read 50 Shades of Grey. Marcel Marcellus, the mime.
Yes. Just mime it all. hang on, don't you mean Marcel Marceau?
Maybe. I don't know. Words speaking.
Right, anyway.
Guy's name.
Anyway, I think... what's her name? That really dumb model. What's she
Paris
called?
Paris Hilton.
Yes.
Jodie Marsh?
No, Paris Hilton. Oh. Paris Hilton. Paris Hilton or somebody of her caliber. And I use the word caliber very, very loosely.
90% of models.
Yes.
I don't think she even qualifies as a model.
Reading Fahrenheit 451.
No, why not just go all out?
1984.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. Highbrow book to a non-highbrow person. Right, okay. I think we're at the end of the show there, guys. We're going to have to call it quits there. So, yes.
Oh, God, I've realized what I did.
What?
I got Marcellus Wallace mixed up.
I know, I was waiting.
Oh, God. I could just end the show.
Yes, I was going to say Marcellus Wallace. He'd get medieval on them.
Well, this has been delightful.
Yes. Anyway, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Andy.
I've been Owen.
We'll see you all next week for more loitering and possibly more strange audiobooks.
Well, yeah, hopefully not.
Right, we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Take care.